An American basketball star freed from a Russian jail.
She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home.
Plus, are churches in Ukraine helping the Russians?
Ukraine's security agency has uncovered evidence that may suggest the Ukrainian Orthodox Church is a nest of pro-Russian propaganda.
And later in the program, we'll examine the role Poland has taken on after Russia's invasion, and we'll meet some Ukrainians who are knitting to help the war effort. Today is Thursday, December 8th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Some new developments in a story we've been following for the past several months. American WNBA basketball star Brittney Griner is freed in a U.S.-Russia prisoner swap in exchange for Russian arms dealer Viktor Bout. Griner was imprisoned in Russia after authorities found less than 1 gram of cannabis oil in her luggage. Here's President Joe Biden.
Moments ago, standing together with her wife Sherelle in the Oval Office, I spoke with Brittney Griner. She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home after months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances. Brittney will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along.
Russian President Vladimir Putin said Wednesday that his army could be fighting in Ukraine for a long time. He later added that the risk of nuclear war was growing, but he said Russia saw its arsenal as a means only to retaliate and not to strike first. Reuters' Jillian Kitchener filed this report.
Amid significant retreats on the battlefield, Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday publicly acknowledged that his army could be fighting in Ukraine for a long time. In a televised meeting with his Human Rights Council, Putin said achieving results from what Russia calls its special military operation in Ukraine can be a long process. But Putin said he saw no reason to mobilize additional soldiers, at least not yet.
In these conditions, the talk about some additional mobilization efforts makes no sense. There is no need for this, for the state and for the defense ministry.
300,000 reservists were called up in September and October in the country's first mobilization since World War II, causing deep dismay and chaos in Russian society. Putin also used Wednesday's televised event to warn the West that Russia would defend itself with all means at its disposal. The risk of nuclear war is growing, Putin said, adding that Russia saw its arsenal as a means to retaliate, not to strike first.
We haven't gone mad. We understand what nuclear weapons are. We have these means, and they are more advanced and modern than in any other nuclear country. This is obvious today. It's a fact. But we are not going to swing it like a razor running around the world. But of course, we proceed from the fact that we have got it.
Putin has rarely discussed the longevity of the war, although he boasted in July that Russia was just getting started. For Ukrainians, after nearly 10 months of war, fears are mounting as winter sets in and airstrikes escalate. Kyiv mayor Vitaly Klitschko on Wednesday warned of an apocalyptic scenario if Russia continues targeting critical infrastructure.
Kyiv might lose power, water, and heat supply. The apocalypse might happen, like in scary Hollywood films, when it's not possible to live in homes considering the low temperature. But we are fighting and doing everything we can to make sure that this does not happen. We are fighting. We are not giving up.
Ukraine's capital city lacks enough heated shelters to take in all 3.6 million residents in the event of complete outages. And the mayor said people should be ready to evacuate if the situation worsens. One Kyiv resident told Reuters, people here pray to live in their homes and pray for victory to come as soon as possible.
That's Reuters' Jillian Kitchener reporting.
Russia continues to bring death and devastation to Ukraine. It is deliberately targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure. It is seeking to paralyze the country at the beginning of the winter. But we stand by Ukraine, and we will make Russia pay for its cruelty.
That's European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen speaking Wednesday. The EU proposed a ninth package of sanctions on Russia over its invasion of Ukraine that would put almost 200 more individuals and entities on the sanctions list. Von der Leyen said the EU favors new sanctions against three additional Russian banks and new export restrictions, especially for dual-use goods like some chemicals, nerve agents, electronics, and IT components. In a video address, she outlined the proposal.
First, we are proposing to add almost 200 additional individuals and entities to our sanctions list. This includes the Russian armed forces, as well as individual officers and defense industrial companies, but also members of the State Duma, of the Federation Council, ministers, governors, and political parties among them. This list covers key figures in Russia's brutal and deliberate missile strikes against civilians and in the kidnapping of Ukrainian children to Russia. Second, we propose to introduce sanctions against three additional Russian banks. This includes a full transaction ban on the Russian Regional Development Bank to further dry out Putin's war chest. And third, we also want to impose new export controls and restrictions, particularly for dual-use goods. This includes, for example, key chemicals or nerve agents, electronics, IT components, all what could be used by the Russian war machine. My fourth point. We will cut Russia's access to all sorts of drones and UAVs. We propose to ban the direct exports of drone engines to Russia and the export to any third country, such as Iran, which could supply drones to Russia. We will also target the Russian propaganda machine by taking four additional channels off the air and all other distribution platforms. And we propose further economic measures against the Russian energy and mining sector, including a ban on new mining investments in Russia.
That's European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen speaking in a video conference on Wednesday. Sanctions require the unanimous backing of all of the EU's 27 member states. Most of the measures proposed in previous rounds of sanctions were approved within weeks, though some were dropped or watered down. A look at Poland and the role it's playing coming soon. Now, though, it's time to check in with our Kyiv reporter, Anna Chernikova. Can you get us started, please, with a military update?
Fighting near Bakhmut would probably be the main news again today because these fightings around this city in the Donetsk region are the most intensive for the moment, and this is probably remains the hottest spot at this point of time. However, we hear some information from military that actually Ukrainian forces managed to conduct a very successful operation around the city of Bakhmut today. And it was possible for Ukrainian forces to kill a certain amount of Russian forces and destroy a certain amount of military equipment. Again, we don't have particularly confirmation if it happened today or some day before, because we only have footage provided by military that showing this the results basically of this operation.
The regular listeners in our audience can tell that you're not in your usual place. There's a lot more background noise, and that's because you're traveling. You're in Lviv today. Can you tell us what it's like there and maybe how the feeling is different from Kyiv?
So situation in Lviv is actually, you know, very different from the city of Lviv that I used to when I was traveling here before the war. Of course, you can feel the war in here as well. There are no destructions in the city, but there are a lot of humanitarian organizations around. There are a lot of humanitarian points around and a lot of volunteers going around. So as we know, Lviv is one of the main places where internally displaced people are currently located. And a lot of companies, not only people, but also companies and businesses have moved here. So, but I should say that people are very active and positive. The life is definitely going on here. And people are very, you know, concentrated on what they are doing and on their life. I had a chance to talk to a couple of citizens, and they told me that actually their day-to-day work is going on. So they go to work every morning, and they basically, you know, are working for the economy of this country. I also asked about energy situation, and the people told me that situation is actually not that bad in Lviv. There were a couple of days of blackout, but some people actually experienced just a couple of hours of outage, and that's it. Some areas of the city have situation similar to Kyiv with longer outages. But in general, as I understood, situation is much better than in the capital.
Are you seeing a lot of refugees, people from other parts of Ukraine who maybe have been bombed out of their homes and villages looking for shelter?
Well, not really particularly, you know, meeting those people, but I definitely see, for example, today I was in the university that actually host some students from other regions. I didn't have a chance to talk to them personally, but I know that there are a lot of them here. And also I know from you know, local authorities as well, and from in general, from people telling that there are a lot of those internally displaced in Lviv for the moment. However, I haven't met them personally today.
And how is it traveling inside Ukraine? Is that dangerous? Is that more perilous than it was in the past?
Well, when you go to the west part of the country, you don't really feel the difference, to be honest. So the train is on time. If you go with the car, of course, you see some checkpoints, but most of the checkpoints are not really, you know, that active as they were at the first months of war. So I should say that I don't really feel, you know, danger. However, of course, you know, I stay on the alert all the time because air raid siren could start any moment and shelling could start any moment. And of course, you have to keep in mind that in case something is happening, you need to know where the shelter is and where exactly you should go.
And that's our daily update from Kyiv, today coming to us from Western Ukraine in Lviv. Anna Chernikova, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish. In a story we first heard about from Anna Chernikova's reporting on Wednesday's show, Ukrainian authorities have uncovered evidence that the Ukrainian Orthodox Church might house pro-Russian propagandists and collaborators. Karen Chamas has the details.
Ukraine's security agency has uncovered evidence that may suggest the Ukrainian Orthodox Church is a nest of pro-Russian propaganda. The agency, known as the SBU, released photos of items found in holy sites around Ukraine. Amongst them were rubles, Russian passports, and leaflets with messages from the Moscow Patriarch. The photos have sparked a debate as to whether these objects are signs that Russia is using the church as bases for Russian intelligence gathering and to fuel pro-Russian sentiment. Nevertheless, Ukraine's government are increasing the pressure on the church, which has centuries-old ties to Moscow. Despite declaring independence from Moscow in May, many Ukrainians don't believe it's really free from Russian influence. I'm Karen Chamas.
Since the start of Russia's war on Ukraine in February, Poland has become a key NATO ally in confronting Moscow's aggression and a valuable U.S. partner in the region. Today, Ukraine and NATO allies rely on Poland for the delivery of weapons and humanitarian supplies, as more than 7 million Ukrainians have crossed the Polish border as refugees. VOA's Mirosława Gongadze has this report from Warsaw.
One day before Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24, Polish President Andrzej Duda visited Kyiv and promised that Poland would never leave Ukraine alone. After the war began, Poland welcomed Ukrainians fleeing the war and treated them as guests. Lukasz Adamski, deputy director of Maroszewski Center in Warsaw, pointed out that Poland became a home for millions of Ukrainian refugees. Ukrainian citizens have extended rights in Poland and vice versa. Poland also has played a crucial role in facilitating the delivery of Western weapons, systems, and humanitarian supplies to Ukraine. Adamski said that the Russian threats changed the not always smooth relationship between Ukraine and Poland.
War contributed significantly to the intensification of bilateral contact, to the enormous improvement of trust and liking to each other. And it also revealed that both states have common interests, common vision of future.
In May, Polish President Duda spoke to the Ukrainian parliament in person, the first foreign leader to do so since the war began. He stressed his support for Ukraine's request to join the European Union and criticized those in Europe who suggested that Ukraine accept some of Russian President Vladimir Putin's demands. In his view, any territorial concession to Russia would be the blow to the entire Western world.
Only Ukraine has the right to decide its future. Only Ukraine has the right to decide for itself. The world must demand from the West the total withdrawal from Ukraine territory and stop breaking international law.
In
2022, Poland became one of Ukraine's main military supporters and, along with fellow Baltic states, a lobbyist for Kyiv's integration into EU and NATO. Warsaw's strong support for Ukraine contributed to an improvement in what had been a period of fairly bumpy relations with Washington.
U.S. President Joseph Biden visited Poland in March, meeting Ukrainian refugees and American troops on the ground. During his trip, he asserted the United States' strategic goal of supporting Ukraine's fight for democracy and self-determination and identified Poland as an important battlefield in the struggle for freedom and security in Europe. In a speech at the Royal Castle in Warsaw, he emphasized the historical importance of Poland's capital city in the fight against oppression. The nation had played a key role in the events that led to the breakup of the Soviet bloc in Eastern Europe and the end of the Cold War.
For generations, Warsaw has stood where liberty has been challenged and liberty has prevailed. Today's fight in Kyiv and Metropole and Kharkiv are the latest battle in a long struggle. Hungary, 1956. Poland, 1956. And then again, 1981, Czechoslovakia, 1968.
He outlined the U.S. commitment to Ukraine and pointed out that the Russian actions in Ukraine strengthened bonds among allies.
Instead, Russian forces have met their match with brave and stiff Ukrainian resistance. Rather than breaking Ukrainian resolve, Russia's brutal tactics have strengthened the resolve. Rather than driving NATO apart, the West is now stronger and more united than it has ever been. Russia wanted less of a NATO presence on its border, but now he has a stronger presence, a larger presence, with over 100,000 American troops here, along with all the other members of NATO.
The United States and Poland have both contributed financially to Ukraine. According to the Kale Institute for the World Economy, between January 24th and October 3rd, the U.S. pledged nearly $55 billion in military, humanitarian, and financial aid to Ukraine, while Poland pledged nearly $3 billion. With Polish territory being a base for Ukrainian support, Poland has become an indispensable U.S. ally for European security. Mirosława Gongadze, VOA News, Warsaw, Poland.
The word Zegri means warm up in Ukrainian, and the Zegri volunteer movement is a collection of people knitting warm clothes for Ukrainian soldiers. Their slogan is, "Mom, I'm wearing a hat." Lisa Bakalets has the story, narrated for us by Anna Rice.
Mama, I'm wearing a hat.
Here are the hats I'm knitting, just like this one.
Stitch by stitch, Alexandra Kushnir from Kyiv is knitting whenever she can. Kushnir is part of the Zegri, or Warm Up, volunteer movement. The goal is to make sure as many Ukrainian soldiers as possible are dressed warmly for the coming winter.
Our plan worked because the hats and socks we need and sent to the front lines. The guys write back to us and ask if we can send some more.
Yulia Savostina is co-founder of Zigrii. Her husband and her brother are fighting on the front lines. She began knitting for them, and the idea took off. Today, some 2,000 volunteers are knitting along with her.
Many displaced women joined us. They have nothing, but they know how to knit. They get in touch and ask only for yarn.
Knitters from other countries have joined the Ukrainian women in their effort. Yerina Solnichner, for example, organized a knitting group in Germany.
We posted ads in all local newspapers, and we have a special location where we get the yarn.
Anyone can join the movement online, and those who can't knit but would love to help are welcome to help collect yarn. That's what Jana Bezdudna, who lives in Norway, is doing.
So I thought I would ask people if maybe they have some leftover yarn lying around. I can collect it and send it over to Ukraine.
At the moment, volunteers have over 200 kilograms of yarn in the works. New yarn or ready products are first sent to Kyiv and then to the front lines.
Almost all knitters add a kid's drawing or a letter. Some print out prayers. They put in candy, candied fruit, jam, common teas. When we get these packages, we cry.
The volunteers say their hats warm soldiers inside and out as they prepare for a long and dangerous winter. For Леся Бакалець in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Ukrainian-American Yakov Gradnar makes prosthetic limbs. So when the war started, he knew how he could help. Along with a team of specialists that include American veterans and doctors, he's assisted dozens of people wounded in the war. Ilona Vojtovich has the story.
Prosthesis for Ukrainians is a project started by Yakov Gradnar and the Prothes Foundation in Minnesota to help wounded Ukrainians take their first steps towards a better life. This is the fifth group of Ukrainian soldiers helped by the foundation since it started work in early summer. Some of these patients lost their limbs in Russian artillery strikes.
Yakov Gradinar, he is our doctor, our mentor. We wouldn't be able to do this without his help.
Gradinar is an orthotist and prosthetist with over 15 years of experience. When Russia first invaded Ukraine, he started looking for the most effective way to help his native country.
I always look for opportunities like this so I can help people. And this gave us an idea to find a way to bring people here, where they can receive quality prosthetics and go through rehabilitation after hearing the air raid sirens and living through the current situation.
Gradnar says American volunteers make up nearly half of the team in his clinic, while volunteers from a local Ukrainian diaspora are responsible for logistics like housing and catering.
We want to raise awareness among Ukrainians in other communities, as well as to inform the American society that behind the pictures of destruction, there are actual people that need help.
The Prothes Foundation estimates about 1,500 Ukrainian soldiers and civilians need prostheses, and that number is growing. 22 people have already completed the program in Minnesota. 600 more are on a waiting list that grows every day. Alana Vojtovich for VOA News, St. Paul, Minnesota.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.